This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Lessons from the world's top professors, anytime, anyplace. World history examined and science explained. This is One Day University. Welcome. You're listening to Half Hour History, Secrets of the Medieval World. I, of course, am your host, Mike Coscarelli. Last time, the emperors and the popes were jockeying for power. Now, we're leaving those squabbles behind for a bird's eye view of how territories became nations and how nations became nation states. We've got the Magna Carta, Columbus, Louis XIV, Eleanor of Aquitaine, King Richard. The name drops are ridiculous. Here's Chris with the crash course.
Now, let's say right from the beginning that when we talk about nations, you can't think of borders and nations and the UN in the way we think of them nowadays. Maybe we should talk about territories, but that's not quite right either, because what we're getting toward is the nation state. It's an early modern and modern construction, and it's something that becomes very important in that period, and we live with it every day of our lives today. But since we are going toward nations, we're going in that direction, I think it's okay to talk about nation building with that caveat. And the reason we look upon this in this way is that if you look at Europe about 900, right, so we have the early, the high, and the late medieval period. So as we look at it at the end of that early, going toward that high medieval period, about 900, and then we look at Europe in 1500, yeah, the map looks different. There's no question about that. And so let's look first an overview of some of these chunks, and then we can look specifically at some of those chunks. The first thing is France. France does not look then like it looks now. And again, these are very subtle and gray areas. There's a very slow emergence of something called royal primacy in France. France's borders move a lot. So even saying France is kind of tough. We might want to put that in quotation marks, because there's Aquitaine and the Bordeaux region and the Norman region, and all of these have very, very strong leaders, almost to the point of being kings, but not quite being kings, and they can't quite get pushed back by the person who's sitting in Paris, who's pretty strong. He's a first among equals, but he's got to keep these other people at bay as well. So power is centered in Paris, but you have other very, very strong areas. And some of those regions could be run by women. The one I think of is Eleanor of Aquitaine. It was a great movie done in the 60s called The Lion in Winter with two great actors, Eleanor of Aquitaine is played by Catherine Hepburn, and Henry II of England is played by Peter O'Toole. And they have this huge battle because Eleanor basically controls all of Aquitaine, incredibly rich, incredibly important. She can't be queen in the sense of being the total monarch, but she's basically running England and France at the same time. So the king in Paris is a king of Paris, the ancient capital, but he doesn't have total sway over all of those other people. Meanwhile, in England, I just mentioned Henry II. In England, Henry II is in a weird position because in one way, he is the King of England. But in another way, as the Duke of Normandy, he's under the King of France. And you really want to complicate it? Eleanor of Aquitaine is married to Henry II, but she used to be married to the King of France. A reminder that England and France literally intermarried with each other. And in the years 1100 and 1200, as late as 1300, the language at court in England, was not English, but French. England has another heritage. It's the heritage of the Angles and the Saxons and the Celts, who had all been there in the central portion of the island and in the western portion of the island. And in the eastern portion of the island, remember the Vikings at the Jorvik Center? York, as it's called nowadays? So you also had this regionalization in England as well, and this role of the local community. So on paper, a monarchy. In practice, not so much. And England and France are married together. Why are they speaking French in the English court in 11 and 1200? 1066, the Norman invasion. William, the Duke of Normandy, invades and becomes the William the Conqueror, and then he's the same person who's called William the First, King of England. And this close relationship is not going to get unlocked for 300 years. Around 1350 it begins, around 1450 it ends, the Hundred Years' War. So England and France from 1066 to 1453 are in this very, very close relationship. Then you have Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. We've been talking about that for some time, and I'll get to that in a minute. And then Spain. Now, we've been talking a little bit about Spain. Spain is its own animal. Remember, Spain is dominated by Islam. The Christians are pushing the Muslims down from 732. About 1085 is the halfway mark with Toledo, which is about center in the box of modern-day Spain and Portugal. And the interesting thing about the development of kingdoms, plural, kingdoms in Spain, is that they are coming together as the Christians are pushing the Muslims down. The Christians are coming together to fight a common enemy, right? So they may not like each other very much, but they have a common enemy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's how uniting takes place in Spain. Okay, little overview. Now let's look at France, England, Germany, and Spain a little bit separately. France, from about 1000 to about 1500, is ruled by a family called Capet, C-A-P-E-T, the Capetian dynasty. Hugh Capet was the father of this family. But as I said earlier, the king in Paris, the Capetians control Paris and the surrounding area, has very, very severe limits within French territories, and they're always fighting off these English claims as well. And yet, that king in Paris, in fact, the kings all over, have a much stronger royal Christian claim to authority. There are much stronger liturgical, ritualistic, religious overtones than you find in England. France also has less experience with representation than England. So what you have is a king and then a court around him called the Curia Regis. And England, by contrast, has something called Parliament. So the king and his court control a small area, but not much beyond that. Whereas the king in England has this other body over there called Parliament, where power flows from the bottom up. So there's going to be some conflict there. Paris has something called a Parlement, but it's something that comes together rather infrequently. The king of France preserves the law, but he is above the law. Now that strikes us as odd. When Pete Rose was thrown out of baseball by Bart Giamatti, the commissioner of baseball, said, "Let no man think that he is above the game." And we say, thinking perhaps to Nixon and Watergate, "Let no man think that he is above the law." Well, that's exactly what it was in Paris. The king preserves the law, but he is above the law. He has stronger bloodlines, he has prestige, he has aura. This stylized ritual in the French court is going to last for centuries ahead. Think of Louis XIV and Versailles, Louis XV, Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. The killing, the beheading of Louis XVI is so striking to the world, because this is a divine right monarchy. In fact, they call themselves the Ancien Régime, the ancient regime, the way it had always been. So France, though it has these competing powers, has this aura about it. So the French king, meaning the man in Paris, has less territory under his direct control. We call this institutional centralization, the Curia Regis, but geographic decentralization. How did it really work? Listen. The king in Paris wants you to pay your taxes. If you pay your taxes and show up to fight when he asks you, the king is going to leave you alone. So Paris is one, the biggest piece, the most prestigious piece in a patchwork. You're not going to have a strong king of France until 1453. And you're not going to have that strong king of France until they start pushing the English out. Again, they unite against a common enemy. Other side of the channel, there's England. England has a stronger drive to centralize than the French, but they had that longer tradition of local authority, of Anglo-Saxon. Even in the area where the Vikings were, it was still, as late as 1100, called the Dane Law, the area where the law of the Danes, the people from Denmark, the Vikings, where that law was in charge, and that's around York. And then the Norman invasion in 1066, when William beats Harold. If you've ever seen the Bayeux Tapestry, either in real life or in photos, what you have is the story, like in a series of cartoons that would be pasted along a wall, of the battle. And so you see William crossing the channel, and you see William attacking Harold, and Harold getting an arrow in the eye, and Harold falling off the horse, and William taking the throne. As an example of what goes on between this other authority, this other power that goes from the bottom up, think of Magna Carta. So you have King John. Remember King John from Robin Hood? In Robin Hood, King John is Prince John, and his brother is Richard the Lionhearted, both children, by the way, of Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine. And King Richard is off fighting the Crusades. He couldn't care less about England. He's French in his heart. He's French in his tongue. It's his language. He goes off fighting the Crusades. He's killed while he's fighting the Crusades. Prince John becomes King John, and he finds that he needs the barons' help to rule. And so the barons force him to sign something called the Great Charter, or the Magna Carta, in the year 1215. Now, it's often said, oh, the Magna Carta doesn't have anything to do with us, meaning everyday blue-collar, middle-class people. That's true. King John signed the Magna Carta with the barons, and the barons aren't asserting, they don't care about rights and privileges for people below them. They care about their rights. When they say our rights, that's what they mean, their own rights. Nevertheless, trial by a jury of your peers, being forced to be charged explicitly with a crime within a certain amount of time, what we call habeas corpus. You could draw a line between the Magna Carta and the reading of your Miranda rights in something that we call due process. And what is Magna Carta fundamentally? Magna Carta fundamentally is a restriction of state power, represented by the king, against individuals. This is a process that's called federalism, and it's something that Americans fight about all the time. What is the size of government? How close should government be to people's private lives? And because you always have this tradition of rising up against a centralized state power in England, this is why monarchy in England ultimately collapses with the Glorious Revolution in 1688, glorious because it is bloodless. At the same time, in 1688, when Louis XIV is the Sun King in Versailles and basically thinks he's God on earth.
After the break, Chris catches us up on Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and also explains how Columbus charmed Queen Isabella.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
What's going around in Germany? Now, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. If you take a look at the Holy Roman Empire at this period, all the way up till about 1500, you have these little states. If you take a map of the United States and look not at the borders of the states, but the borders of the counties, geez, who knows how many counties there are within each state, that's kind of what Germany was like. And so above that, so you had lots of counts, lots of local dukes, lots of feudalism, but above that you had that Holy Roman Emperor. Just listen to the phrase, right? Holy Roman Emperor. Who was ever on that throne says, I'm tracing myself back to Henry V, to Henry IV, to Henry III, to the Ottos, to the Fredericks, to Charlemagne, to Constantine. I am the defender of the faith. I am king of the Romans. Even though I'm up here in Germany and Rome is down there, I am king of the Romans as well. And the phrase that they use is the translatio imperii, the translation of the empire. Now let's look at that word translation for a moment. When I translate from French into English, I'm taking words, if you will, from one place to another place. When relics of a saint in the Catholic tradition are moved from one place to another, when Pope John Paul II was beatified in the spring of the year 2011, a few months before that actually, his body was translated, moved, not the body itself, but the tomb, the coffin, was moved from its original burial place underneath St. Peter's to a spot for veneration, and that spot, it happens to be right next to where Michelangelo's Pietà is. If you walk into St. Peter's Basilica, you go to the right, and the first altar is the Pietà, and the second altar is the body of John Paul II in the spring of 2011. And that is called the translation of the body, right? So that's a physical translation. This is a intellectual translation, an ideological translation, that the empire has moved. Well, that shouldn't surprise us, because didn't Constantine move the empire? Well, he moved the capital of the empire from the Latin West, the city of Rome, to the Greek East, the village of Byzantium, that he renamed Constantinople. So why can't it move again? Remember, Charlemagne said that Aachen was a Nova Roma, a new Rome, a Tertia Roma, a third Rome, Rome, Constantinople, Aachen. So this is not strange to the medieval mind. And the name of the dynasty, the family name, was the Hohenstaufen, a series of Ottos and Henrys and Fredericks. My students often ask me, why don't they keep changing names? Why do they just take the same name again and again and again? And the answer is, I don't know why. But you also have many local authorities as well. However, the Holy Roman Emperor holds sway over Germany in a much stronger fashion than that King of Paris, called the King of France, holds over the people in France. That Holy Roman Empire is going to be a problem for the church all the way up through Luther. Now let's go back to Spain. When you say Spain, you think of a country nowadays. And we always say Spain and Portugal, that strip of land of Portugal, that small country that has had a disproportionate influence on world history because of Henry the Navigator and his school of navigation and those great ship captains. Spain doesn't exist in the ancient world in the way we think of it today. The Roman Empire had a couple of provinces over there in Spain, but when the Muslims come along, they take over the area, but it was broken up into various regions. And the region in Arabic was called Al-Andalus. Andalusia, you may have heard that word. So if you're doing some reading and you see some reference to Al-Andalus, that is a Muslim or an Arabic reference to the region that we today call Spain and Portugal. Dominated by the Muslims from 732 to 1492, and having these smaller kingdoms fusing together as the Christians defeat the Muslims. Now, we've talked about that in general terms several times. Now, let's look at it more practically, and some of these names will be familiar to you from your travels or your study. Barcelona, for instance, it's a small region, which becomes the Kingdom of Aragon. And that area gets married with a local kingdom called Catalan. And in the 800s, those two come together in larger kingdoms, smaller kingdoms becoming larger kingdoms, called León and Castile. And in the 900s, Castile goes to Navarre around the 1000s. And then the big event, the fall of Toledo in 1085. And as the Christians are coming together and fusing their authority together, it's working, right? So the kings can now claim that they are defending the faith. They use the exact same phrase as the Holy Roman emperors are using. And it's working. They're coming together. They're gathering lands. And as they defeat the Muslims, they gather those lands in as well. So that eventually, in 1469, toward the very end of our period, we meet Isabella. Isabella of Castile-León, in the year 1469, marries Ferdinand of Aragon. And make no mistake, she was the brains of that operation. And so Castile-León gets together with Aragon. They finally finish the reconquest with the fall of Granada in the southernmost portion of Spain called Seville. And the reason Columbus, as the phrase goes, sails the ocean blue in 1492 is that everybody saw this coming. It was an inevitability. And Columbus had had some trouble getting funding. And he was kind of flirting with Isabella. And he said, come on, give me some money for some ships. And she said, I can't. Can't you see I'm fighting the Muslims? And he said to her, would you agree that when you win, and we all know you're going to win, Your Majesty, when you win, you'll give me money for 3 ships. And she says, yeah, crazy genuine, go away. And as the story goes, as the legend goes, she walks into her throne room once the battle is over and Granada has fallen, and she mocks the Muslims by yelling, Allah Akbar. Don't know whether it's true or not, but it's a great insult to do it that way. And Columbus bows before her and says, congratulations, Your Majesty. Now can I have my 3 ships? So we have this connection of all of these great events from the end of a medieval effort that had begun 700 years earlier. Let's bring this together in a little case study. So in the last topic, we had a case study of Gregory the VII, Pope, and Henry the IV, Holy Roman Emperor. Let's look at another case study. And it again has the same topic. The clash is this question of the king as a religious ruler. Now pay attention to that phrase. The king as a religious ruler and the Pope as a secular ruler. Nothing new here. Constantine thought he was a religious ruler. Justinian thought he was a theocrat, a theocratic king. Moving forward in time, Louis XIV is going to say he's a divine right king. And the Pope as a secular ruler, because Constantine had given the Bishop of Rome land, and then Pepin in the 700s had given the Bishop of Rome land. And we talked about the question at the very end of the last topic. We talked about the question of whether this power and this land, what did that do to the spiritual and moral authority? And some people saw it very much as a corruption. And so some people say this incident that I'm going to talk about now is not the high point, but the low point of papal claims to be emperor of the world, as some people said Innocent III claimed around 1200. Who's higher? Who can depose whom? Who says? French example. A pope by the name of Boniface VIII, known as a very political man who likely engineered the abdication of the prior pope by the name of Celestine, and a French king, powerful French king, Philip IV. In the sources, in the French sources, he's Philippe le Bel, Philip the Fair. Same guy, Philip IV, Philippe le Bel, Philip the Fair. Long reign. We're talking about 1300. And the issue is taxation without permission. The tradition was that if the French king wants to tax the clergy, he must ask the Pope for permission. Philip says, I don't have time for that. A, I need money, and B, quite frankly, I don't have to ask him for permission because I'm the king. They're subject to me as Frenchmen. I'm going to tax them. Boniface goes crazy over this, and to say, to show that no, in fact, you are not in charge of the church, even though it's in French territory. He reaches into French territory. He reaches his religious authority in, and he creates a new diocese, and he names a new bishop without asking the king's permission. So again, this is a battle royal like Gregory VII and Henry IV, and it has to do with ultimate authority, not unlike the investiture controversy, temporal power and spiritual power. Boniface is so strong in his claims that he puts out a document that's called Unam Sanctam. Church documents are named after the first couple of words. Sometimes it's an indication of what the document is about. Sometimes it's not. In this case, he's talking about Unam Sanctam, one holy and apostolic church. There is one and one only, and that church is the highest authority in heaven and on earth. And therefore, everyone on earth, if he wants to get to heaven, must absolutely at all places and at all times acknowledge the ultimate authority on heaven, in heaven and on earth, of the Pope, including a king. There is no way Philip is going to stand for this. He sends his men to chase Boniface. Boniface leaves Rome, and he takes refuge in a castle at a place called Agnani. And something occurs called the insult at Agnani. The forces are coming in. Boniface is abandoned by his own people. He says, the only safety I have right now is to sit down and to dress myself in my full robes, wearing the chasuble, wearing the crown, the mitre, the fancy triple crown, wearing my ring, having my crozier. They'll never do anything. They burst through the door. And we're not quite sure what happens. We know that they verbally abuse him. They insult him. Did they physically abuse him? Did they strike him? We're not quite sure. But what we do know is that Boniface dies of the shock. A few years later, because they had taken possession of him, basically taken him prisoner, and for the next 75 years, the papacy will be in Avignon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Half Hour History, Secrets of the Medieval World. Next time, we're going back to the Renaissance for a spiritual awakening. half-hour history, Secrets of the Medieval World, from One Day University, is a production of iHeart Podcasts and School of Humans. If you're enjoying the show, leave a review in your favorite podcast app and check out the Curiosity Audio Network for podcasts covering history, pop culture, true crime, and more.
School of Humans.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.